Chapter 60 Sean walked slowly up the gravel drive towards the Goldberg mansion. He walked between an avenue of Pride of India trees, and around him the green lawns climbed in a series of terraces towards the rococo facade of the house. It was a morning of drowsy warmth, and the doves in the Pride of India's cooed sleepily. Faintly from among the ornamental shrubbery, he heard the tinkle of laughter. He stopped and listened to the sound of it. Suddenly he was shy, loath to meet her again, unable to know how she would receive him, for she had not replied to his letter. At last he left the drive and crossed the carpet of lawn, until he reached the lip of an amphitheatre. In the bowl below him stood a miniature replica of the Parthenon Temple, clean white marble columns in the sunshine, with a circular fishpond like a moat around it. He could see the shapes of carp gliding slowly through the green water below the lily pads. The lily blossoms were white and gold and purple. Ruth sat upon the raised marble edge of the pond. She was dressed all in black from her throat to her toes, but her arms were bared, and she held them out and cried, "Walk, Storm! Walk here to me!" 10 paces away, her solid bottom solidly planted on the lawn, Storm Friedman regarded her mother seriously from under a bang of dark hair. "Come on, baby!" Ruth urged her, and very deliberately the child leaned forward. Slowly she elevated her plump posterior until it was pointed towards the sky, displaying a laced and beribboned pair of pantaloons beneath the short skirt. She remained like that for a few seconds, and then, with an effort, came up onto her feet and stood balanced precariously on her fat pink legs. Ruth clapped her hands in spontaneous delight, and Storm smiled in triumph, displaying 4 large white teeth. "Come here to Mummy," laughed Ruth, and Storm completed a dozen unsteady paces before abandoning this form of locomotion as impractical. Dropping to her hands and knees, she finished the course at a canter. "You cheated!" Ruth accused, and jumped up to catch her under the arms and swing her high. Storm squealed ecstatically. "More!" she commanded. "More!" Sean wanted to laugh with them. He wanted to run down to them and gather them both in his arms, for suddenly he knew that here was the whole meaning of his life, his excuse for existing, a woman and a child, his woman and his child. Ruth looked up and saw him. She froze with the child held to her chest. Her face was without expression as she watched him come down the steps into the amphitheatre. "Hello?" He stopped in front of her, twisting his hat awkwardly between his hands. "Hello, Sean," she whispered. Then the corners of her mouth lifted in a shy, uncertain smile, and she flushed. "You took so long. I thought you weren't coming." A great grin split Sean's face, and he stepped forward. But at that moment Storm, who had been staring at him with solemn curiosity, began a series of convulsive leaps accompanied by yells of, "Man! Man!" Her feet were anchored against Ruth's stomach, which gave power to her thrusts. She leaned out towards Sean, determined to reach him, and Ruth was taken by surprise. Sean had to drop his hat and catch Storm before she fell. "More! More!" yelled Storm, continuing to bounce in Sean's arms. One of the few things Sean knew about babies was that they have a soft pulsing spot on the top of their heads, which is very vulnerable. So he clung to his daughter in terror lest he drop her, and in equal terror lest he crush her, until Ruth stopped laughing, relieved him of his burden, and said, "Come up to the house. You're just in time for tea." They crossed the lawn slowly, each of them holding one of Storm's hands, so that the child need no longer concentrate on balancing, and could devote her whole attention to the fascinating manner in which her feet kept alternately appearing and disappearing under her. "Sean, there is one thing I have to know before anything else." Ruth was looking down at her child, not at him. "Did you..." She paused. Saul, could you have prevented what happened to him? I mean, you didn't..." Her voice trailed off.
"No, I didn't," he said harshly.
"Swear it to me, Sean. As you hope for salvation, swear it to me, she pleaded. I swear it to you. I swear on... He sought for an oath, not on his own life, for that was not strong enough. I swear on the life of our daughter. And she sighed with relief. That was why I did not write to you. I had to know first. He wanted to tell her then that he was going to take her away with him. He wanted to tell her about Lion Cop and the huge empty house that waited for her to make it into a home. But he knew it was not the moment. Not immediately after they had spoken of Saul. He would wait. He waited while he was introduced to the Goldbergs and was left with them when Ruth took the child into the house to deliver her into the care of the nurse. She returned, and he made small conversation during tea and tried not to let them see it in his eyes when he looked at Ruth. He waited until they were alone together on the lawn, and then he blurted it out. Ruth, you and Storm are coming home with me. She stopped over a rose bush and picked a butter-yellow blossom. Then, with a slight frown on her face, she broke each of the tiny red thorns off the stem before she looked at him. Am I sure? She asked innocently. But he should have been warned by the chips of diamond brightness in her eyes. Yes, he said. We can be married within the next few days. It will take that long to arrange a special license and for you to pack. Then I'll take you to Lion Cop. I haven't told you about... Damn you, she said softly. Damn your conceit. Damn your arrogance. And he gawked at her. You stroll in with your whip in your hand, crack it once and expect me to bark and jump through the hoop? She was working herself into a fury now. I don't know what dealings you've had with women before, but I, for one, am not a camp follower, nor do I intend being treated like one. Did it ever occur to you for one single second that I might not be prepared to accept this favour you intend bestowing on me? How long did it take you to forget that I have been a widow for 3 short months? What supreme lack of perception made you believe I would run from one man's grave and throw myself into your condescending arms? But, Ruth, I love you, he tried to stop her outburst, but she shouted at him. Then prove it, damn you! Prove it by being gentle. Prove it by treating me like a woman and not a chattel. By understanding! Now his surprise gave way to an anger every bit as intense as hers, and in his turn he shouted at her, You weren't so bloody fussy on the night of the storm, or afterwards. As though he had struck her, she stepped back a pace, and the mutilated rosebud dropped from her hand. You swine, she whispered. Get out, and don't come back. Your servant, ma'am. He clapped his hat onto his head, swung round and strode away across the lawn. When he reached the gravel drive, his steps slowed, and he stopped and wrestled with his anger and his pride. Then slowly he turned. The lawn was an empty sweep of smooth green. She was gone. Ruth ran up the wide marble staircase, but by the time she reached her bedroom window, he was halfway down the drive. From the height of the second floor, his figure was foreshortened, so he appeared massive, and his dark suit stood out clearly against the pale gravel of the drive. He reached the gates and stopped. She leaned forward eagerly across the sill of the window, so he could see her move easily when he turned to look back. She saw him deliberately light a long black cheroot, flick away the match, adjust the hat onto his head, square his shoulders, and walk away. In disbelief, she stared at the twin columns of the gate, and the dark green hawthorn hedge behind which he had disappeared. Then slowly she left the window and crossed to the bed and sat down. Why didn't he understand? She asked softly. She knew she would cry later, in the night, when the real loneliness began.